Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Mostly Horror early and ad-free on Amazon Music.
Download the app today.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Late nights at work taking a toll on your skin? Do you find yourself staring at those dark circles in the mirror? Well, it's time to meet your new best friend, Dark Circle Defense Balm from Lumen. Lumen is a line of brilliant men's skincare solutions crafted especially for men who want to look and feel their brightest. Whether you're a seasoned skincare pro or a total newbie, Lumen Skin has got you covered. Lumen's Dark Circle Defense Balm is a lightweight gel that absorbs seamlessly into your skin to brighten your under eyes and instantly plump dehydration lines. It's basically an espresso shot for your eyes. The best part? Lumen will let listeners of this podcast try the product out for free. Yes, you heard that right. Free. Head to lumenskin.com/wondery and get your free trial of Dark Circle Defense and their other amazing products now. Say goodbye to tired-looking eyes and say hello to a new and refreshed you. Don't wait any longer. Your skin will thank you. That's lumenskin.com/wondery for your free trial.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Welcome to Mostly Horror Movie Night.
Mostly. You sounded like you were in pain there on that one. Just
whoa! I had a burp stuck. I'm Steve.
I'm Sean.
And hello. Mostly Horror. so we never know what to do.
This
we never know what to do when we start this episode. We should also, this is kind of a funny, we recorded an interview yesterday for a different episode that we thought was going to be coming out the same time as this episode, and then this episode's now going to be coming out earlier, so we're recording this intro and outro a little bit swifter than we normally do.
We're getting all mixed up over here.
Taylor Swifter.
We're
back. I don't know. We have honestly a great interview. We don't have great interviews. We have an interview, a conversation with Marguerite McIntyre, who is co-creator of the new show Vampire Academy that's out now on Peacock. Not the whole thing's out. It's coming out on Peacock episodically. But it was a great conversation. I think it's an interesting episode because this is a little out of our wheelhouse,
yeah.
I would say. It's not
sure.
Our normal thing that we would watch. But the whole point of this show, like Sean mentions at the end of our interview. No, we didn't record that part. Sean said it off camera.
While we were talking to
the whole goal of this show is to talk to creatives, to talk to people that make art that is at least mostly horror.
Yeah.
And anything with vampires in it is mostly horror.
Absolutely. It's for anybody that is listening that might be a fan of the Vampire Diaries, Marguerite played Sheriff Elizabeth Forbes in that. So, and it seems like this is, it seems like a very different show, Vampire Academy versus Vampire Diaries. It does seem like a very different show, but it seems like it's in the same sort of wheelhouse where if you guys were and are Vampire Diaries fans, then this is probably right up your alley. And it comes out, by the time you're listening to this, it's already out.
Yeah, it'll be out. Absolutely.
So you should be checking it out. But yeah, talking with Marguerite was great.
And if you're not a fan of Vampire Diaries, that's okay, because
the
conversation is so good. I loved even just getting kind of this behind the scenes, which is one of my favorite things that we do, is getting these behind the scenes look at the creation of things.
100%.
And Marguerite talks so much about what it takes to adapt something, what it takes to flesh something out from, reading it as a book to putting it on the screen and casting and finding places to shoot. It's such an interesting conversation that has a lot of behind the scenes aspects to it,
100%. Our show is clearly a, it's a bunch of different stuff. You know, sometimes we bring on people just to kind of play a game using aspects and characters from the genre to have some fun. Sometimes we bring on people just to be like, hey, you made this thing a really long time ago and we absolutely love it, and let's hear some stories about it. And then a lot of the time it's bringing people on to learn about how the art is made. Like, we're kind of a behind the scenes show, and it's always fascinating hearing about that stuff, especially with a show like this that sounds so involved and big, as you'll hear as we go. Like, she's clearly very good at what she does. Clearly a very creative person, and managing the show sounds like an impressive feat. So,
a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
It sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
Before we get into that conversation, Sean, what do you got?
I got a few things, man. Oh, dude. Well, so first off, yesterday I went to a screener. We had like a whole thing set up, and wait, no, does this count? I don't know. I'm going to go off of real life, and I don't know if this
you
counts
can
for...
talk about it.
So this might be timeline wise different, because right now we're kind of, we got several things we're recording at once and that we have lined up. So like Steve was talking about, we're not sure the exact release schedule for the show.
Yesterday was September 13th.
There
for
you
context.
Go. There. Yeah. Fine. All right. So I was invited to a screener of The Retaliators, which is a horror movie starring Michael Labardi, featuring a ton of musicians from the alternative rock genre. We got you know,
Chelsea, can you throw in the sound somewhere?
Disturbed, even though no one in Disturbed is in the movie, but yeah, let's do it. Can we get a cut my life into pieces, because we got Jacoby Shaddix. No one's gonna sue us. This let's get a bad cover. This is my best.
Yeah, as long as we get the
But so it's featuring you know, Jacoby Shaddix from Papa Roach. We got most of, I think all of the guys from Five Finger Death Punch. You know,
all five fingers.
Yeah, is that their thing?
I have no idea.
Members, we got Tommy Lee's in the movie. And then it's some of the guys from Ice Nine Kills. Music from Asking Alexandria, Escape the Fate, just all sorts of people going on. I'm not going to pretend that I can list everybody. But it was really cool to be invited to that. They had like a nice cocktail hour before. I might have thrown back three beers immediately. but yeah, that was a fun time. And you were supposed to, because we were going to split things up. You know, we were invited to that, but we were also invited to a screener of Pearl. It was kind of our invite back after we were invited to a screener of X last time, where we bumped into Kid Cudi, you know, Mr. Solo Dolo himself. But then you were feeling under the weather and you didn't go.
Well, so here's my little story and reason behind. I'm very sad that I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you live that Sydney and I are probably going to try to run and see it sometime this weekend at night. I know we have friends here, but we'll probably try to run and see it if you want to join us. But I had an early, I had an 8:30 meeting in Hudson Yards, which is in Chelsea, so on the west side of Manhattan. So at 8:30 I had a meeting. I was supposed to leave the meeting at 9 and then travel to Brooklyn, where we were shooting our first like stuff with players of the season. Big old thing. I've helped orchestrate a good amount of it.
Sure.
My meeting went until 9:30, and I was like, I can't take the subway. I need to take a car.
Yeah.
So I got in a Lyft, and you know that I get very car sick.
Yes. Yeah. You have
I
to
have
just for,
never
for listeners. Yeah. Steve has to drive. It was honestly the
I
best
drive,
back in Michigan, because I never had to drive anywhere. Steve just always
I
drove.
I drive everywhere, and I thoroughly enjoy driving, but I cannot. I am bad at being in a car.
Yeah.
I have never been so close to vomiting in a car in my entire life.
Wow.
To the point where we had just crossed the Brooklyn Bridge, and I was going, okay, I'm feeling nauseous and sweaty, and I can tell that I'm paper white.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, do I puke in my backpack? Do I roll down the window and roll off out the side of the car?
Oh
And so I, and it was like, you know, it, there was a AC on and stuff. So I wasn't like overheating, but I was like, sure, maybe I'll roll down the window, see if that helps. So I was like, can we roll down the windows? I rolled on my window. The Lyft driver, this is a story time with Steve. The Lyft driver rolls down all four windows. It's 80 gajillion degrees outside.
Oh, so it just so makes it hot now.
It's so hot. I'm being peppered by New York City air, and I'm just fucking dying.
Oh, man.
Long story short, and then there was one point where I burped, and I thought it was the end. but luckily, you know, the Lyft got to my delivery destination fine. I was good. But then I had a busy-ass day at work, and yeah. So long story short, crazy day at work, got home and I felt like garbage. So I was about to say,
how long is your recovery time with something like that? Because once my equilibrium is thrown, I get overheated. Yeah. I'm not as much as you, but car sick. I'm very familiar with it. But it'll when that happens, my day is done. It's over.
Yeah, normally my recovery's fine. Like if, you know, like there's times where like Sydney and I will take a car somewhere and come back to the apartment and like I'll lay down for a bit, sit in front of the AC and just kind of recuperate. But like I went straight from the car ride of hell to being hyper stressed about like setting up this really cool thing that I did at work. And it was just so stressful that I like my body didn't fully like recuperate. So, it took me coming home and eating a whole bag of popcorn and then I felt fine. So,
well, popcorn fixes everything, so you're good.
But I'll see Pearl eventually. We'll talk about it probably on the next episode, maybe, because I am very excited to see that. So,
yeah,
that's it.
So I guess we'll lean right into the first thing I want to talk about. I have a few, but we're not going to be able to get to all of them here. But there's a couple I do want to hit. So talking about Pearl, it sounds like they've already announced a third movie. Yeah, isn't that insane? He just knows what he's doing. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's so like to have, so it's called Maxine.
Yes.
And I guess I won't, the description is kind of a spoiler for X, so I won't really talk about the synopsis, but it's the fact that alone that Ty West and Mia Goth have created X and Pearl and put them out within the same year. And have had pretty critically positive receptions is awesome. I love that for original horror, for A24, for anyone involved. That's so cool. The fact that they now have a third film coming out that they've already announced and seems like is going to be ready not shortly hereafter is wild.
Yeah,
like that's. I mean, maybe they filmed it all at once and like the rollout is just really cool the way that they're doing it, like hitting you with the left hooks like out of nowhere, because it's not like Fear Street where you're like, oh, we know this is going to be a trilogy. But yeah, I think that's so cool. Even if I don't like it, I'm excited.
I was about to say, it's exciting to me because it sounds like, you know, they got together and they started making X and they just got more and more excited about the project as they worked on it. And that's usually a good sign. Right. So when you're making something and you're just getting bombarded with new ideas as you're working on it, I feel like that can't be anything but good. That has to be like a hint that, you know, that there's an energy behind it that is awesome. And we both enjoyed X a lot. Like so excited to see Pearl and yeah, if they want to keep going, like hell yeah. So
yeah, I'm really curious. I would love to talk to Ty West and see like what was this his pitch, you know, like did he come to the powers that be at A24 and be like, listen, I got this idea for this trilogy and it's gonna rule. And also like the vision for the aesthetic, like X is a very grungy 70s you know, old porno vibe, and then Pearl has, just from stills that I've seen, because I haven't seen the trailer, like Pearl's is the golden age of Hollywood, that sort of look, Wizard of Ozzy look, and then Maxine is, again, I've only seen small things, but like set in the 80s LA, like that sort of vibe. It's so cool that it just seems the vision is so good. Like I love when you see something and you're just like, that the vision is so good.
Whether
or not it's something I enjoy personally. Yeah.
No, 100%. When it almost feels like something writes itself. That's my favorite. So, all right. jumping into the next thing. Have we talked about Wendell and Wilde on here? Have we? Because the trailer finally dropped. Did. I don't think we talked about it at all.
No. Yeah, we unfortunately had a great moment that would have been great for the podcast, but we did it in real life like losers. Right. Sean had watched the trailer earlier in the day, and he was in the living room. I think you like told me that it was out, or you asked if I'd seen it yet or something like that. And I hadn't that day. And so I watched it on the TV, and I was sitting watching it. Mm-hmm. And then it finished, and I just looked back at you, and you were in the kitchen. And you went, "It's so fucking good." And I was like, "It's so fucking good."
Yes.
It just looks like, I mean, for anyone that doesn't know, Wendell and Wilde, stop motion animation, directed by Henry Selick, who's Nightmare Before Christmas, Coraline, just a master of that art form, starring Key and Peele. It's a Monkey Paw production, so Jordan Peele has, I'm sure, some additional hand in it. Looks really cool. It premiered at TIFF, I think yesterday, late yesterday of the day that we're recording this.
I'm pretty sure that Jordan Peele is producing it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's Monkey Paw, he's the producer. Well,
and it's Key and Peele that play Wendell and Wilde.
Yeah.
Wendell and Wilde.
Yeah.
So, all right, my brain maybe just misunderstood. Yeah. But it looks so good, and I can't tell if it's all, I mean, there's clearly like mixed animation that's happening, but I'm wondering if they really did stop motion or if it's like animated, like computer animated to look like stop motion. Either way, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to put it down at all, but I'm just trying to see. I think that we should have known that already. Let me see what I can find.
I think it's stop motion.
Is it?
Yeah.
I guess it just looks so, because it does have like a different look to it at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, they could have done stop motion and then composited it on top of it and added texture and that sort of stuff. But I think it's stop motion at its core.
So I'm learning that, okay, so this is just a quick wiki thing. I'm just going to read this. But
I like when you say, "So I'm learning," it's like you're getting a news report. I'm just now learning. But,
Steve,
Wendell and Wilde.
Breaking news. Wendell and Wilde is a 2022 American stop-motion horror comedy film directed by Henry Selick from a screenplay written by Selick and Jordan Peele, who also serves as producer, based on Selick and Clay McLeod? How would you pronounce this?
McLeod? Clay McLeod, yeah.
McLeod?
Probably McLeod.
All right. Clay McLeod.
I don't know.
Chapman. Sorry, Clay. Unpublished book of the same name. And then, everything else that we had just talked about. So, yeah, I guess it does look like it's going to be stop motion. And I don't know. I'm just stoked on it. If you haven't seen the trailer, everybody should watch the trailer. That whole part went on for way too long. That's pretty much what we wanted to say was we're stoked on it, and it looks really good.
Yeah.
And, God, give me more horror for kids all day, every day. Amazing.
Give me more Henry Selick. We haven't had something from Henry in a long time.
Henry, you want to come on the show? I know you're a regular listener.
I would love
to
have Henry Selick on the show.
I'd poop. I'd freak out, dude. I would freak out mid-interview.
I need Netflix to, because it's a Netflix original. I need Netflix to have the press contacts. You're seeing behind the curtain on today's show, but I need Netflix to have the press context for me to get Henry Selick
on
the show.
Let's walk up to Netflix right now and just start yelling until somebody answers us. Okay. All right. The last thing that I'm going to bring up, even though there's a ton of stuff that's coming out right now, and we're always going to be behind because we're just getting much content. But the last thing I wanted to talk about was Marvel's Werewolf by Night. Have you heard about this at all?
I did. I didn't watch it because I didn't think the trailer looked like something I would enjoy.
I didn't know that the trailer even came out. I'm just looking at a Fango article. Well, now
maybe
you
it
have
was
me
images.
Feeling dumb. One second. I don't think so. Is there a goddamn?
Maybe it didn't. Maybe it was just images?
I guess maybe it played at the D23 Expo. Yeah, so I'm wrong. Yeah. But it looks like it's a quick thing. It's a special that they're doing.
It's like a special.
But it's based on the comics of the same name. And I don't know. I guess I haven't watched the trailer, so I don't know if it's going to be any good. But I'm just always, dude, werewolf content makes me so excited, so it bums me out that the things you saw made it seem like you wouldn't be interested, because I would really like to be interested. The art from the comics is a lot of fun. It's that very retro, I don't know. It would be cool if it was cool, and the idea of Marvel kind of jumping into horror a bit more would be cool, even though Marvel's been very all over the place lately in terms of mood and how I feel about it. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree regarding Marvel. The trailer looks all right. I just don't know how I feel. I'm very like, Marvel really needs to do something cool for me to like get reeled back in.
That's fair.
I normally would see everything. I haven't seen Thor. I haven't seen the most recent. And I think this may be, I think this may be the point where I'm like behind, because I haven't seen the most recent like Marvel shows. I haven't seen the most recent Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
Like I'm getting crazy behind on stuff because I just am like, I don't care enough. But also I just don't care enough to watch. You know, I could find time if I wanted to. And this is just the point we're at. So anyways, Werewolf by Night. You know, it's going to be a special that's coming out. I'll probably watch it. It looks interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to at least give the trailer a watch when we're done here, and then maybe we'll chat about it a little bit more next time. Dude, it's hard. There's so much content coming out, and it's hard to keep up, especially when we have a show. I mean, A, you're a busy boy, and then B, our show, you know, sometimes you're mid-watching a show, and then we book somebody, you know, and it's like, oh, shit, well, now I have to read this book in the next week and a half, or I have to watch this entire series or season of something. So,
it's a good problem.
It is an amazing problem to have. I'm just saying that you can get really derailed from the things that our personal watch list become a little bit more difficult now that this is what we do, which is a fun problem to have. But
that said, we have a great episode, great conversation with Marguerite McIntyre. We already talked a bit. Any final thoughts?
She was a pleasure to talk to. I'm excited to check out the show, and I think you guys are really going to dig the conversation, regardless of what any of us could be into, or what we think we're looking for in a show. I think that, let's cut that part. Actually,
keep that in. That was an amazing.
Well, I didn't want it to sound bad.
Amazing way to say that. No.
Because it's.
No, it's great.
It's definitely a mostly is what I'm trying to say. And I think that the conversation is fascinating, is my point.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. And we got there eventually. I hope you guys enjoy our conversation with Marguerite McIntyre, co-creator and writer of Vampire Academy.
Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
All right, we are joined today by Marguerite McIntyre. Marguerite is an actress, writer, and producer known for her role as Elizabeth Forbes in The Vampire Diaries. On top of being in multiple TV shows, films, Broadway productions, she is most recently the co-creator and co-writer of Vampire Academy, which premieres September 15th on Peacock. Marguerite, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you. You have a really nice radio voice.
That makes me feel so good. Thank you.
Wow, that was so smooth. I'm like, all right. Hey, Steven. It's very nice to meet you.
That's so
this
good.
This is really fabulous.
You're stoking him up. He's going to ride that high for the rest of the week.
Absolutely. So here's a great segue, right? You're leading me into a great segue. So while we were doing research, about you and looking into your work and things like that, we noticed that you're from Detroit. We are also from the Detroit area. I listened to Dick Purton growing up, so I'm sure
Dick Purton. That's crazy. I haven't heard that name in so long.
Yes. He's the best. So, I will randomly go through and look at YouTube old broadcast. I wish that you could tune in. They need to make a radio where you can listen back in time to old broadcasts because.
By the way, that is a great idea and also a great show.
Let's write the show.
We might have to start thinking about that. That's something
TM.
There.
Yes. TM that, right?
Yes, TM. Copy, TM.
The first thing, once we saw that, we just wanted to kind of find out, because there's not a lot of info. How long were you in Michigan? Were you raised there?
I lived there all the way through. I started high school. So, my whole life growing up was Michigan, and I was born in Detroit. My mom and dad were both from Dearborn. I'm sure you know Dearborn.
Yeah, absolutely.
My dad, shockingly, worked in the auto industry. So we lived around that area and eventually ended up in Birmingham for a minute. And then my parents split, and my mom had gone with my dad on this trip to Arizona for another work thing, and she had fallen in love with Arizona. So she and my younger brother and I moved to Arizona when I was in high school, partway through 10th grade, which was a little bit of a weird time, especially.
Yeah.
right?
Absolutely.
Plus, in Michigan, where I was from, 10th, 11th, 12th grade was high school, and where I moved to, it was 9 through 12. Coming in partway through 10th grade is very charming to be like, hi. Plus, it was a huge school. It had my graduating class was 750 people or something like that.
Wow.
So it was a really big school, and also Arizona was the moon. I was like, I don't understand anything about this place.
Yeah, especially compared to Michigan.
Exactly. Yeah. It was different wild. Worlds. A different world. But I was very lucky, and I liked it. I was really lucky that I found some good people, and then there was a really good drama department there, which was my hook in. And I'd always sung and played guitar and done stuff, but I really enjoyed that crowd of complete weirdos. But also at that school, it kind of drew in not just drama people. It drew in there was football players and everybody it kind of had this big broad kind of appeal because it was a really good program. So I got lucky and I had a lot of fun when I went there. It could have been tragic, but I got super lucky.
It's good that you haven't written a memoir about your awful experiences from that period of time.
I mean, there's always a version of that. I mean, you can write that version, but no, I did find a lot of things to love about it, which is, it's a great, in some ways it's those experiences in your life when you're growing up that they help prepare you. I always feel people who've had a perfectly mellow, chill, great upbringing. I love that they've had that, but I'm also oh, good luck when you get to the world.
Because you have no perspective.
You're going to have to still have a knock here and there, and you're going to have to figure it out, how to deal with it. So but it was good. I like both places. I haven't been back to Michigan in a while, and I've been really craving it.
Yeah, it's Michigan. It's fun to visit when it's warm enough outside.
I know. I was going to say, it gets cold, but I'm one of those weirdos who likes cold. I live in L.A., and there's a little mountain town here, Big Bear, a couple hours away that I go to all the time in winter because I crave, the pine trees and the snow and all that Michigan-y stuff. So I still get a taste of that.
That's good. It's good that you can just pop out for a few.
Exactly. It's a short...
You get to choose when you want it. Yeah, when you live in Michigan, winter is 6-7 months long, 17 months long, and you're just stuck.
Your Honda Civic gets stuck in the snow. Yeah. That's what you're doing. Yeah.
It's winter until it's humid and horrible. So it's winter and then humidity and warmth. Yeah.
Marguerite knows.
Yeah, I was about to say, a clear Michigander. But But so talking about origins a bit, and our roots, we have learned, but before bringing you on, that you're not much of a horror fan. This is usually the part of the show where we ask people, you know, kind of their earliest exposures to the genre. And I still want to pose that question to you, but it didn't leave you with the sense of love from it. But do you have any early memories of maybe creeping down, peeking behind the couch and seeing a movie that is the reason that you do not mess with horror today?
You know what? That's such a good question. Why I will say in a general way, why I'm not a super horror fan is that sure. I think the world is really scary. Like, I'm one of those people who's like, I'm big and brave and I'll go do anything and I'll throw myself at the world pretty hard. But I also am like, but it's scary. Like, just read the paper every day and yeah. like there's your horror film. So I think part of me is always like, I think my adrenal glands are always like getting like tapped anyway. But I think I'm trying to think like when I was growing up, like what was the first scary movie I probably saw? I mean, I remember the first time I saw Jaws. I remember yeah, being terrified. I was literally like, I was afraid there was like a shark under my bed. I mean, Jaws scared the crap out of me. Things like, oh, Rosemary's Baby. Like I saw that on some like I don't know, Channel 7, like 4:30 movie or whatever it would be. Yeah. And I remember being like, oh, terrifying, terrifying. And then here's the stuff that really creeps me out, to be honest. I can't see anything slasher because I can't suspend my disbelief far enough, even though, of course, I've been working on shows where I'm like, no, the blood on the decapitation doesn't look good enough. We need to get that. Yeah. And so I don't understand how both those things operate. I can't watch it, but I can work on it. And if I've seen it happen, then I understand it's fake. And if I yeah. watch it on a movie, I'm like, it looks too real for me not to be stressed out.
Yeah.
But when I saw like things like The Sixth Sense, to me, yes. that is a genre that gets in your head and freaks you out and makes you yeah. question everything. Like, to me, that is something that I can watch but also be completely deeply freaked out by. So there's that, if anything, is a sweet spot. Or something like, because I was thinking about this, I loved Pan's Labyrinth.
Yes.
But Pan's Labyrinth didn't scare me. It was like my most, yeah. I loved it so much I wanted to go back and back and back. Even though it was scary, it was fantastical and like another world and beautiful. And so like that probably is one of my favorite movies that you, I suppose, could be called part of that genre.
Absolutely.
So like a lot of things. Yeah.
I was just going to say, you've hit us with some of our favorites right off the bat, and yeah. you've included Pan's Labyrinth in the horror genre, which not everybody does. So overall, great answer.
Yeah. Yay! I mean, and that's, you know, we're called mostly horror, and, you know, one of our main things is... You're fine.
No problem.
One of our main things that we talked about early on when we started the show is, like, we can really call anything horror that we want to, and we'll talk about your show coming up. But we definitely, you know, Pan's Labyrinth, specifically Guillermo del Toro, makes these things that have this horror element to them, while also being so fantastical, so sweet, so, you know, charming as well. So I definitely think, you know, we would absolutely classify it as that. I'm curious. So you talked about working on things that have horror elements while not really being a fan of the genre, or at least specific aspects of the genre. What is it like when you get to those scenes? Like, do you really dive into those? Because it sounds like you're talking about decapitations over here. Like, is that something that you really take pride in working on?
Forgive me. My dog might start barking again.
You're fine.
When we're in those scenes, it's so funny because I remember writing a scene in the originals, and it was one that I was like, I can't even remember what episode what it was. I think it was like a real one. It might have been where Klaus like is and he dips his, you know, his paintbrushes into the blood of his enemies and paints on his, makes his art. And that was me. And I was like, that's really sick. That's like so fucked up. But yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
No, go ahead.
That was probably bad.
Go for it.
But I was like, but that came out of my brain. Or when somebody is so enraged, like we all have this like thing inside of us that like why road rage is road rage, right? Like why yeah. people suddenly will do things that normal sane people would never do. And like, you know, become crazy. Like a lot of violence is out of like uncontainable emotion. Yes. So if you kind of try and get in that head and you're like, but I have the power to do this and I have no compunction. I'm somebody who's like, I don't do bad things because I don't quantify anything as good or bad. I am an ego-driven person who is like, I will do what I want to do. That opens every door. And so when you open every door, what's the easiest way to deal with some people is to just be like, boom, there goes their head. Boom, I'm painting with your blood. Boom, it says. So in your creative head, as you're thinking through it, there's a logic to it. If you're just like, just unhook your politeness and say, this is what this person is, this is their reality. Yeah. So, and also on the page, there is beauty to it and a weird gothic elegance to it. And I love it.
Yeah,
when
absolutely.
You see it, there can be too, when you see it, like that is the one thing about if you make horror beautiful and terrifying at the same time, which I feel like is that Pan's Labyrinth thing where there's just this crazy elegance to the actual visuals of it that are so engaging to me. I just get so pulled in. Then I can kind of get into it. So when I'm producing it, there's also like, this will just look dumb. This I won't believe. This will look better if we're closer. This will look better if we're far. Then you just get into the practical head of, I want people watching it to sort of love it and feel the thing that you're going for, which is, my God, he's gone too far. Or isn't it delicious that he did this thing? It's terrible and I love it. So it's all that stuff. It's like, what do you want them to feel and how you approach it? So it's, I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah. That reminds me of specifically, so it's, you know, your show is on Peacock, and this reminds me of another NBC show, I think it was NBC, Hannibal. I don't know if you've watched Hannibal, but Hannibal is...
I have not.
So Hannibal is obviously based off of, you know, Hannibal IP, yes. But yeah. It is a show that is filmed so delicately and beautifully, and even at its most macabre moments, is gorgeous. Like, it is all about the cinematography. And I think that it's very similar. I think that it's, you know, we can create these disgusting things or things that you know, would normally be horrified at. But if you're treating it as art, it's a totally different creative space.
Right.
It really
horror
is. It
can
really
be
is.
Beautiful. speaking of Hannibal, we asked you, or your answer was really about, you know, writing those moments and kind of creating those moments. But what about your experiences as an actress? You were in Red Dragon, where I believe you played Valerie Leeds, where if we remember correctly, you get killed by Voldemort, kind of before anybody else.
Yeah, you're mixing up your IPs,
well,
on you.
I don't want to brag, but that is true. yeah, it was so funny. I was, when I auditioned for it, I was like, what is this? And it was right before Christmas. And I just sort of went in, and then I was like, yeah, great. And I came back and I'm like, whoa, this is a lot. And I think his name was Matthew Mungle. Matthew, is that his name, who was the special effects guy? I'm going to quickly IMDb this. But he was amazing, because then what happened is you go in and they do this kind of crazy, my character has a terrible, as you said, death.
Yes.
Terrible death. And then there's so much that has to get done, so much prosthetics to get built and all that stuff. And I'd never done anything like that before. So this was my entrance into understanding like what the process was, how crazy it was, how long it took to kind of make and build all those things. This character, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, if it feels like it's giving too much away, but they literally...
No. Feel free.
I mean, it's been out in the world for
Yeah, they should have seen it by now.
I mean, exactly. She basically, there's this weird kink of like Voldemort, where he wants to sort of see himself in the eyes of his victims. So he puts these mirror shards in their eyes. And so you have to build this thing around the eyes. So once that stuff is in, you can't see anything. So there's the other thing. When you're shooting all day, you're like, I don't have somebody hold my hand and take me wherever.
Yeah.
So while you're shooting, the eyes are out as long as they can be. And then weirdly, Tom Verica, who's a very fancy pantsy director now, he's in Shondaland, he's done all the things and he's amazing. He played my husband in it. He had his neck like slashed horribly, right?
Yep.
So before all the blood goes in and before all my glass goes in, we're all hanging around like eating lunch, and I literally was getting so sick because his neck flap just kept flapping and flapping, and I was like, I cannot have this conversation. I understand that's not real, but I can't do it. Like, I can't. I gotta look away, Tom. So it was wild, and it was, you realize what it takes to make those
sure.
fantastic gory sequences work. It's extraordinary.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah.
That's such a great anecdote. I love that.
Right. So
progress. Yeah,
able to take that discomfort from what you're seeing on set and put it into the acting, though, it sounds like. So that's
there you go.
I mean, oof, that was really scary stuff. And then I think about the poor kids in it, there were children in it, and I'm like, how are they handling this? And they just tell the kids, this is the day at the picnic, we're shooting this, we're doing this, we're doing that, and they just don't tell them anything. And I'm sure they grow up and they're like, wait, what movie was I in?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Never watched the movie. I don't know.
I know.
Let's jump into Vampire Academy a bit. I'm curious, to start, would you consider Vampire Academy a horror show or not?
I would consider there to be horror elements in Vampire Academy, and that was pointed and specific as it was in, you know, for sure, Originals and Vampire Diaries. And in the DNA of Julie Plec is in this as well as mine, and in all Julie Plec shows, and what I think makes them pretty wonderful and successful is that there are many strands woven. So it's not pure horror, it's not pure fantasy, it's not pure romance, it's not pure pop comedy, it's not pure any. So it's getting that one, those wonderful strands interwoven, so that that pop of horror is shocking and horrible when you get it, because you might have just come out of one of the most deep romantic moments, or deep friendship moments, or big action moments that are about, like, some in Vampire Academy, a lot of just great fight sequences. So you have all these kind of elements. It is one of the elements that we worked at, because we have a kind of vampire. There's three kinds of vampires in the show, and one of them is the Strigoi, and they're the sort of undead, immortal, id-driven, violent, blood-feeding, I want blood. That's their reason. That's everything they want, and so they'll do anything to get it, and they're horrific, they're your nightmare. So those guys needed to feel like your nightmare, and we worked hard to get them to sort of seem like that in our visuals as we built them. So so though, you know, when you see one of those coming up at you, you're not cheerful. That's a guy you want to, like, turn around and run away from. So they're the kind of the core of our horror elements.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
When we were, you know, reading about the show and watching things, this is something that I feel like you touched on. Shows that have all these different elements are always so successful and so fun to watch. I specifically think of Game of Thrones, one of my favorite shows of all time, but it's something that does exactly what you're talking about. It utilizes all these different elements. So I think when you're so cognizant of that writing, it makes things meld so much easier, as opposed to you're just like, well, we're just going to juggle all of this and hope that it fits. You know what I mean? Like, you're so aware of the different strands that you have. I'm curious, you talked about the three types of vampires that you have, and I guess for anyone that hasn't, we're going to tell people to watch the trailer before they listen to this, but for anyone that hasn't read anything, doesn't know anything about Vampire Academy, can you give us just a little kind of rundown on the show itself?
Yes, it's based on a beloved series of books by Rochelle Mead that came out about 2007, it might have been 2006, I can't remember, that Julie and I have known each other since we did Kyle XY, which is way back in 2005. And we would, at the end of the season, like, sneak away to Cabo, and we were very boring when we got there. We didn't go to dinners, we didn't go hiking, climbing. We would lay and read books. All the time we would lay on a thing. We're tired, we're gonna lay down and read books. So we would all bring a bunch of books, and she was like, oh, this is kind of a fun book. And she read it, and I thought it was just a book. I did not remember it was a book series. Then I thought I had only read the first book, and I'd actually read all of them, which surprised me, but not when I went, oh, because they're very engaging, and there's a lot going on in this world of class, and what this story is very interesting. And the story that Rochelle tells is a wonderful story that at its core is about these two young women, Rose and Lyssa, who are about to sort of graduate into the, you know, the world that they live in, this vampire world that has three different kinds of vampires. And Lyssa is one kind. She's a royal Moroi, and the Moroi vampire are kind of genteel, and they don't kill when they feed. They're mortal, and they're sort of, quote unquote, the good vampires. And they're both royal and non-royal Moroi, but they are the Moroi, and they're kind of the ruling class. And the Dampir are the class, the protector class. The Dampir protect them against these bad, bad id Strigoi vampires who try to attack them. And the Dampir were originally half human and half Moroi. So their vampire side gives them a special strength and agility, but they don't feed on blood and they are also mortal, but they're very strong and a very good protector class. But Lyssa is a royal Moroi and Rose is a Dampir, and they're on opposite sides of this social strata. And it is a very, very class-driven society. And their long, long friendship growing up has been sort of, you know, looked upon with a little bit of side eye, but now that they're getting older, it's really frowned upon. And how do they maintain that friendship in the world that exists as it is? And in our show and in the book, they start to open their eyes to the world that they kind of inherited, and it doesn't look so good. And what do you do about it, right? So, and that also can create pressures on those friendships. And when they each recognize their kind of part in this society, and the part they play and the part that they have played unwittingly, and what does that mean? And is our friendship, you know, it's tested, and will they survive? Will they fight back? Will it pull them apart or push them together towards the revolution we all want to see happen? You know what I mean? So it's like that. That's kind of the story.
You always hear about star-crossed lovers, but you never hear about star-crossed like best friends. You know what I mean? And I feel like
I agree. No, yeah. I 100% agree. Listen, there is a lot of romance in this because there is. Sure. But there is definitely, it is, I love telling the story of two best friends who have these challenges. And obviously there's the parallel to now. When I went in to look at these books again, I realized I'd read all of them, and I realized, oh, now is the perfect time to tell them because of all of this. We're sort of all on the brink of the changes we can't foresee, and hope they go well, and hope we all sort of participate in trying to make us all have a fair shot, you know? So that's kind of, I think it's really interesting to see it through their eyes. But yes, there's of course romance because it's me and Julie. And also Julie and I have been friends forever. So there is something fun about a couple of girlfriends who've been buddies and besties for like ages to tell a story of like two, you know, young women who
absolutely
have been friends forever. So
I'm sure it was a blast writing it with that connection too. You know, obviously, when we talk to creators, it's always different to hear the different paths that are taken and actually getting something created, which is a miracle with anything. How long did it take from kind of conception to now? What was kind of the process of getting this show out?
Well, I'll give you a little prelim, which is when Julie read that book, it was before she had ever read or even thought of or heard of Vampire Diaries. So she was like, I love this thing. I would love to do this. But as she says, has said in interviews recently, she's like, no one gave a crap about what I thought then. And nobody wanted to make a show I wanted to do. So I just was like, well, that'd be fun. And then Vampire Diaries came along. And then after Vampire Diaries became, you know, originals and legacies. And then she made this deal with Universal and they said, hey, what's something you've always wanted to do? And she's like, you might kill me, but I always wanted to do these books. And they, instead of being like, you're crazy, they were like, awesome. Yeah. So then she came to me and I was like, she's like, I know you're kind of done with the vampires. And I was like, well, look at this though. Look at this world. Just because you don't want to be in a world where you have nothing to add. Like, I feel like I wrote on, you know, I played on one and wrote on two of them. And I just wanted to not be unfresh with all of that. But once I saw what those books were and realized, oh, it's all that hierarchical stuff. It's that, you know, palace intrigue. It's all the things. And we were like, okay, we're going to take this out of the kind of smaller world that it lives in the books. And in the US, it's mostly Montana and Pennsylvania. And we're going to bust it out and say it's going to be an outside the human world in the globe on our earth.
Yeah.
But a little outside, it's developed as a culture outside the human world, and only some humans know this exists. So that being the case, and having already baked into the books this royal kind of court and all this stuff, we were like, let's go to Europe. So all of this happened, shockingly, it was something like a year ago, April. So May, June, July, August. So like 17 months ago, we said, let's do it. Then we both loved the exact same, got billions of pictures of places to shoot in Europe. And I was like, what about this place? She's like, it's exactly the one, of the, like a needle in a haystack. We both picked the same spot, which was Olite, Spain. We were like, this feels like what's in our heads. And then we did not have a pilot when we started our writer's room in May. I don't recommend it. I think if you can, try and have a pilot before you start, because you feel like you're building the plane in flight. Right. But we were like, we believe in this process and we believe in ourselves and we're going to just keep doing it. And we started shooting in September, and the magical, crazy transformation of this, basically part of the town. Mm-hmm. So Olite has this beautiful castle that is our kind of centerpiece. And when we were on the turret, finally, when we flew to Spain for our tech scout, we're like, what's that building over there? And they were like, that's a monastery that is for sale. It's a decommissioned monastery. And we're like, you mean that's our school? Great. So wonderful. So like, and there's this little town on the back of the castle, which is exactly what you want. That one block of stuff with shops and a bar and a this and a whatever. And then across these vineyards is this beautiful place. But we had to get these magical artists, our set designer and our production designer and our costume designers and everyone to just come in and work like so fast. I can't even tell you. How is this ever going to happen? We were like, this is going to be a miracle if we can shoot anything in September. And we did. And they were magical. And they loved the challenge of this show because every episode was different. We weren't just sitting in a classroom or sitting even in the castle. We shot in Lisbon. We shot in a town called Zaragoza, which is on a couple hours away, which has all this Moorish influence and it's beautiful. We shot in San Sebastian. We shot around, so we weren't just feeling in too parochial in our world. We still could tell a slightly bigger story. So it came together faster than I don't even know. I mean, Julie and I were both like, heads were spinning basically the entire, and still I'm in post, like I literally left post to be like, I got to go do this thing. but we're proud. Like it's, I can't believe given everything and COVID and casting all around the world, like our cast comes from literally all over the world and shooting in Spain and all of us communicating with each other and finding our way with each other. It just, there were a lot, you know, it snowed on our last day in April. It snowed at the castle. It snowed like snow. And I was like, oh, it's April. Yeah. It's like, Spain. Like what's happening? So, I mean, we had some stuff happen, but it was a crazy, joyous, let's put on a show. Somehow this is going to happen energy. Yeah. And it did.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That quick of a turnaround is crazy.
Yeah,
it's great.
It's really interesting,
especially
and also,
go ahead,
John.
You go.
The other thing I want to point out that you said you're still in post, which is I think one of the fun things about episodics is that you can be in post while they're being released. So I guess you can't say what the experience is like, but you could probably go from your past experiences. But what do you kind of anticipate, like? Will there be any decisions made after the first episode comes out and there's responses to it? Or, I mean, have enough cooks been in the kitchen that, like, in post you're kind of just, like, doing color and sound and you're done?
Well, I'd love if we were just doing color and sound. I mean, there's so many aspects. Just have a little cocktail and relax and chat. But there's, like, VFX. There's so much stuff and there's just so much, like there is just so much, but we won't really be changing anything, partly because we had great partners in our studio and network and they were really supportive and wonderful, and the notes that they had were always either something that we were like, oh, we just need to underline this thing that we already have more, right, so they understand that it's not reading enough to them, or there'd be a good point where like, ooh, great, let's do that. So I felt like by the time we actually had scripts and were doing everything, they were really on board. It didn't feel like after the fact they were like, wait, what's this? I mean, the pilot is separate because a pilot is a pilot, which means you don't know what the show is. We're writing it hoping to make it. Like by the time we were writing episode four, we were like, okay, we know what this is. Episode two, there was like a beginning to grow. There was some fun stuff in episode three. And but we kept finding it, you know, we kept having to find it as we rolled along and shot. Oh, let's add another scene into that now that we're in post and it's cut together. We need a little piece of this and need a little piece of that. But by the time we got into 4 and 5 and said, we're just, okay, we all know what this is. So not really, I don't think. And also we're posting now episodes 9 and 10. So we are,
you're wrapping it up.
Yeah. We're wrapping up. Post will be wrapped in the next 3 weeks, I think.
Hell yeah. So, hell yeah. It sounds like such an ambitious project in all the best ways. I'm just curious, especially with you saying, you're kind of figuring it out as you go, which I think is just the nature of making anything. No matter how solidified you have something in your head, it always kind of becomes its own thing. How difficult was it juggling all of the different, kind of subgenres in it and the moods in it, as well as it sounds like there's so much lore and politics, which I think all of the best vampire things have, like vampire politics and secret underground society politics is always really interesting. But how is establishing all of that, quickly? You got all these different kinds of vampires. Like, how difficult was that in the writing and filming and just juggling all those things? It sounds like a lot.
You just you're like, boom, you hit that spot. It is super effing hard. Yeah. And this is another thing that you said in interviews. You're like, we can do it. We got this. Yeah. There's a lot of lore. We'll just layer it in. We got this. We're layering it in. And there were some times people be like, I don't understand what's happening. okay, we're not layering it quite as, nuanced in a way as we can. So we had to kind of keep having people who didn't know the world see things, read things to say, is this clear, right? Because yes. It is a very complex. I mean, in the books, she basically starts hi, this is this world. Here's how it works. This is what we're running from. This is a thing. So that's a great way to do it, but we can't do that. And what we were really trying to avoid was a big monologue, because the books are from Rose's POV, from Rose saying, hi, this is our world. Because it's a perfectly fine way to go about it. But we were like, there's another way in that we were really trying to do. So we did pretty well. At the end of the day, it kind of layered into where most people really kind of got it. And we were like, okay, now we just need to give them something at the beginning of the first few episodes, which led to our saga cell. So we have a saga cell now and the first top of the first 4 episodes, which sort of says, hi, there in this world, there are these 3 kinds of vampires. And it's just a little quick primer. Even if you don't catch it, it's a little bit of okay, I get there's 3 different kinds. And then the rest of it, you'll get as you go along. Cause I don't think anything is particularly daunting once you're in it to understand. Yeah. But it was hard. And I think it's a big ensemble. We have 10 series regulars and a lot of very beloved big arcs, character arcs of other recurring characters. So, but again, we've done that before with big groups of people. And in some ways, you always feel like you're shortchanging someone, but our eye is always to, in success, if we're able to have a season 2, we know what we left on the table and what we want to kind of come back to and give some more love to this thing. And a lot of times it's on purpose, because you're like, the story that we want to tell there is just starting to creep along here, and it will happen in season 2. And that's when we can push those levers. And then that's when you want to see the conflict interpersonally as well as plot-wise, right? So there's a lot to come.
Almost had to start every episode with the Star Wars panning where you just read the whole book, establishing
By the way, Julie literally was like, that's it, we're doing the Star Wars crawl. Yeah. I don't care anymore. We just have to do the Star Wars crawl. And I was like, we can't. Who wants to start a show reading? Unless it's Star Wars. I mean, that's different. But
Well, there's so many. I mean, you have one of my favorite animated shows of all time, Avatar: The Last Airbender. They start their episodes by explaining the whole kind of plot of the show. And then, I really think for anything, no matter how dense it is, I know I brought up Game of Thrones. It's another good example. Yeah. If people really enjoy a show, they're going to do their best to follow along. One of the shows I could point to, one of my favorites, is Dark on Netflix. It's a German show. Crazy confusing. I literally used a website to follow timelines and stuff. But I agree. It's worth it.
If you, if you love it, you're gonna. I also don't think we're that Byzantine. I mean, I'd love to say we were like so fabulous. You really do need like a whole. You need to go get the appendix from the play. It's not that, isn't it? It's not that. But
that's after season two.
Watch out after that. But there are a lot of characters. There's like I can understand like. We're meeting a lot of people fresh, like.
Yes.
But that's where our cast. I do want to brag a little bit on our cast. I won't feel right if I don't get to. Our cast is like I said, it was cast from around the world. I mean, and it meant we got to meet a lot of people for each role of every. You cannot imagine the variety of people who came in for each role, so you got to sort of say, I just love this person, and a lot of times you're like. Oh, they're not right for this role. I'm not even sure they're right for that role, but we love them. So if this cast this way, okay, that means we had a couple of actors come in and read for like four different parts. And we're like, no, you're going to get cast. We just don't know where yet. We just love you. We're trying to figure it out. It's a whole, the grid, where you fit on the grid. But I think that that's the other thing. When you're watching compelling people, do a good job, I feel like I'm like, I don't care as much if I'm like, oh, I do have to, whatever, I'll figure it out the next thing. I'm like, oh, Mason, Mason in the books is a really good example of Drew Liner doing a great job for us because in the books, he's a bit of a sad sack, right? He just like loves Rose and Rose is like, yeah, you know, all right. She's just, you know, it's not, they're friends. But in this, we've kind of done a little more with his character. And when we shot a scene that's in the pilot between Rose and Mason. And I was like, oh, that's what, you know, doing an adaptation can do. You have time that you don't have in the books. You have a different kind of medium to tell it. And you have this person doing something interesting and having this, you know, connection and intensity. And I just was like, that actually is why you even adapt anything. It's to see like an actor take this thing and make it a thing and they're connection with the other actor and in this world and they all kind of rose to the challenge of like these parts of that, you know, people are a little in love with these characters. Yeah. Michelle Meade said to us, especially Dmitri was very like, he's in the books, he's Russian. Mm-hmm. And has a Russian accent, and we cast a guy from Manchester, England, so he doesn't have a Russian accent. His name is Kieran Moore, but he brought the internal intensity and the internal sort of quality that is very Dmitri to us. And I think as people see it, they're like, oh, no, I get this, makes perfect sense. And Rochelle Meade, we were like, how will she feel about this? And she said, if I picked my perfect Dmitri, 50% of my fans would say I was wrong. So she's like, and I made him up. So right. We all have things in our heads. So you just, to me, I'm like, if anybody starts the show, stays with it and is like, not won over by these guys, I just feel like they must have a cold dead heart.
Yeah, fair. There's something wrong with them, obviously. No, that's it's so it you get to kind of set this, you get to set the canon now. You get to say, you know, no matter what is in the books, like you now have the visual representation of this thing, which is a really interesting aspect. And it's great to have that that comment from the creator as well. Like that's got to be reassuring.
Well, she's been wonderful and really supportive, and I think she's excited. And we're, you know, we launch tomorrow as we record, so it's a little exciting. I'm just like, here we go.
Absolutely,
you
know?
Yes.
No, it's gotta be. It's gotta be.
It's a lot.
I'm sure. Well, we need to obviously let you get back to post production, but before we that, we have something at the end of all of our conversations that we call mostly horror recommendations. So normally, what that is. Couple horror films, couple non-horror films. We're going to let you off easy with one because I think that we should recommend for you Red Dragon because people should watch it realistically. Absolutely. You know,
they
we spoiled
see
a little
Vera
bit.
Next.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It's, you know, it's a great film. I love Red Dragon. I do think people listening should watch it. But if you wouldn't mind, you know, maybe one or two non-horror films that you think people should check out.
You know what? I feel terrible. This is one of those ones because I haven't seen anything in so long. Once you're in production, you just don't do anything or see anything. But yes. I will say, listen, what I will say is if people have never seen The Sixth Sense, they have to, because it's now kind of an old movie. So see it because it's just so worth it. But the only movie that I've seen lately that like I was like, I will fight to see this movie because of what I heard about it. And then it was the most wonderful movie, is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes.
You guys, yeah. That movie is like the best movie ever in all the land.
Yes.
High I loved praise. It.
Couldn't yeah. agree with you more.
I still like, haven't seen it. I know.
Yeah.
You will, is, you, here's it. Sean My is only slapping. Advice before you see it is mm-hmm. because what happens is when I watch anything now, I'm always like half asleep. By the time I even get to like, oh, I have a little time, I sit on the couch and it's a real problem. Then I start sinking down, and then my head, and then I'm like, wait, what? And I have to go back and back. I want an hour long takes me 2 hours because I keep going back because I fall asleep. So I'm just terrible. So thankfully, when I watched Everything Everywhere All at Once, I was awake and alert and ready, because this is a movie you have to bring yourself yeah. to, and you should, and it's worth it. And Michelle Yeoh is literally so brilliant at everything she ever does. She's one of my favorite actresses, but to see her in this is like, she's perfection. Kill and the it. Movie is really, really, really great. So I recommend
yeah.
that heartily.
Yeah, I'm so it's... mad that I didn't get to see it in theaters. But
me I'll, too. I'll I didn't it see it in theaters either. No? I didn't. Okay. So and it still had that gigantic okay. impact on me.
Good.
So yeah. so I don't think it'll lose a lot.
Yeah, it is so good. I saw it the day it came out, and then went to see it the day after because of the effect it had on me. Absolutely love that film. Love Daniels as a creative group. I think that they're going to keep brilliant. Making great stuff. Well, Marguerite, again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Like we said at the top, Vampire Academy comes out September 15th on Peacock. Check it out. Anything else you got coming up? I know that probably not. You're working on this
you know,
one thing, right?
I've been kind of busy on this, but I do actually have one other thing coming up.
Yeah.
Randomly, the thing I was working on before this is a show called From Scratch on Netflix, and it comes out October 21st. It's based on a memoir by Tembi Locke, and her sister Attica Locke is a really accomplished, wonderful writer. So Attica was the showrunner, and Tembi and Attica were the showrunners of this beautiful experience of this room that I was lucky enough to be in. And it's a beautiful story of a African-American woman from East Texas meets a Sicilian chef, and when she's abroad for school, and you know, they have a lot of cultural stuff to kind of work out with each other. And it's a beautiful, beautiful love story. And it's, it's October 21st on Netflix.
Okay. Amazing. Well, yeah, we'll you heard it here. It. Check out From Scratch on Netflix, Vampire Academy on Peacock. Marguerite, thank you again so much. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Thank you guys so much for checking out our interview with Marguerite McIntyre, the co-creator and writer of Vampire Academy. Again, that show is out now on Peacock. Check it out if you haven't already. You know what time it is. Hopefully.
What time is
it's
it?
Time for the Mostly Horror.
It's a vacation. Sorry. All right, let's go.
It's time for the Mostly Horror moment of the week. And something that I just found today that's not going to relate to anyone outside of New York. Based on an article from AMNY.com by Emily Davenport. the Bronx Zoo is debuting a new spooky after-hours dinosaur event in October.
Did they learn nothing from Jurassic Park? They got dinosaurs up in the fucking zoo now, dude? Can't.
So it's called Dinosaurs in Darkness, The Hatching. It's meant for older audiences, and it's going to transform the zoo into a thrilling walkthrough experience that sends visitors on an adventure to find a rare dinosaur egg that is ready to hatch.
This honestly sounds
guests
really
will
cool.
be up close. Absolutely. Guests will be up close to prehistoric creatures in a whole new way as the adventure unwinds.
Dude, is it going to be like it runs puppets and like all animatronics and shit?
Possibly. We should try to,
oh my God.
We should try to make an appearance. Yeah. But yeah, it's really cool. Normally they do like Boo at the Zoo, which is like kind of a little kid trick-or-treating pumpkin carving sort of thing.
That all sounds
fun. This is going to be every Friday. Yeah, this is going to be every Friday and Saturday, basically all October.
Let's go.
At the Bronx Zoo. Yeah, I haven't been. I know you haven't either, but I haven't been to the Bronx Zoo. Yeah. I hear it's a good zoo, so.
I'm down. I'm 100% down, especially for dinosaurs. Like we talked about with, well, I guess it depends on when stuff lays out. Dinosaurs
They'll hear it in the future. Yeah.
Yeah, dinosaurs are objectively cool is where I'll leave that.
Yeah, exactly. So. You may hear that in a future interview. Anyways, that has been your mostly horror moment of the week. Thank you again to Marguerite McIntyre for being on the show this week. Thank you guys as always for listening. Check us out on social, Instagram at Mostly Horror Pod, Twitter at Mostly Horror. I am Steven is Average on everything, and Sean is at Hypocrite Inc. or Hypocrite.inc.
Yep.
Get that period in between there.
Yep.
And that's all we got.
Okay.
We'll catch you guys next time.
Goodbye.
If you like Mostly Horror, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcast.
Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.